You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams, and joining me today is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_walk74. David, how's it going, man? You all surviving the cold down there in Texas?
We are, man. We even braved the elements, had a little bit of football in the snow today with the Walker brothers down here, so... Yeah, it didn't last long. Spent more time getting ready to go outside than we spent outside, but that's part of the equation right now when it's single-digit weather. So, you know, speaking of single digits, Oklahoma has a single digit by their name. You like what I did there?
Yeah, that's 10. A good segue.
They're back in the top 10. Let's just get that out there right out of the gate. And we're going to break that down here in the first segment. But coming up later in the show, we've got a crossover episode on tap because the Locked On Thunder host, Ryland Stiles, joins us in segment two to talk about Austin Reeves. Does he have an NBA ceiling? Could he play at the next level? Right. It was his take on that as a guy that covers the league every day. And then in segment three, you know, we've been having this conversation about where does Long Kruger fit in Oklahoma men's basketball coaching history with Billy Tubbs and Kelvin Sampson. And to have that conversation, I brought on the best coach I personally know. I went to Northeast Oklahoma to find a three-time state championship basketball coach who just happened to be inducted recently into the Oklahoma Coaches Association Hall of Fame and also happens to be my father, Jerry Walker of Fort Gibson High School, to have that conversation with us in segment three. So some good stuff on tap, John.
It is a star-studded Oklahoma / family affair episode of the Locked On Sooners podcast. So make sure you stick around for that. And make sure you are subscribed to the show because we bring on the big name guests weekly here on Locked On Sooners. Another big episode coming down later in the week, and I'll let David talk about that more as the show progresses. But David, big news again. You mentioned it. Oklahoma back in the top 10 after a thrilling win in double overtime over West Virginia. And to me, it just is a further testament of where the country sees them as a team. And, you know, I feel like it's 100% accurate to have them in the top 10 because they've just been playing fantastic basketball over the last month of the season.
Yeah, they've got more top 15 wins than anybody in America right now. And I think the fact that they skyrocketed up to number 9 a couple weeks ago, and then they took a loss, minus two starters on the road, a 5-point loss in Lubbock. The fact that they were able to bounce right back and get right back in the top 10 validates this team. And I think in that locker room, those guys are looking around at each other like, no, we are for real here, right? We might be a nice story to some people, but we are for real. That number 9, you know, in the big picture of the NCAA tournament, that number 9 might not mean much because they're going to be seated where they're seated, but it's a signifying thing that the nation is taking notice of them. And when we talked about yesterday, what is their ceiling? Well, man, if you're number 9, you're one spot away from a 2 seed essentially, right? I mean, if you're number 8, you're a top 8 team, you would think you're a 2 seed at least. So they're just creeping on up there and playing quality basketball along the way. If they stay focused on what they're capable of doing and execute, then who knows where they're going to land.
Yeah, so far it doesn't seem like the moment has been too big for this team yet, and the ranking and the national publicity that they're getting hasn't been too big. I mean, yeah, they had that loss against Tech in Lubbock, but it wasn't a bad loss. It was competitive, hard fought, you know, nose to the grindstone type of game. You know, it was a defense first game, which we're not used to seeing in the Big 12, especially on the football side of things. But yeah, I mean, this is just a team that just continues to grind away, and they continue to find ways to win. And each week it's a little bit different. You know, against Iowa State, they kind of had to, you know, hold off a pesky Cyclones team. Against West Virginia, they had to battle back at times. They got a big lead, had to battle back. So yeah, it's exciting to see them continue to just, you know, plug away, do the work that they need to do. And, you know, they're not like blowing people out, but they're still, like I said, they're finding ways to win games, and
yeah,
all you can really ask for.
And you're not going to blow people out with the schedule that they have, but the one thing that you take notice of quickly is there's no time to enjoy those big wins that they get. And all of a sudden, they were supposed to play Texas tonight here in Norman. However, that game is being pushed back to tomorrow, so it's now a Wednesday tip. And what is Texas ranked? Only number 12. So here they go, you know, back right back at it. Another top 15 opportunity to add to their, you know, arsenal of incredible wins is to try to go for the sweep against Texas. Now Texas will be loaded. They've got their guys, so they were missing some guys in Austin. And I'm sure they feel like they're going to come in there and get this W. So it's going to be interesting to watch that develop. And another interesting development on the OU men's basketball team right now is we've talked about this eligibility freeze, that this team, if they chose to, could basically come back intact for the 2022 season. But Kerqueth, who is a rotational player right now, he's kind of fallen out of the rotation. He's more of a situational player, but originally from the Sudan, and has kind of come out there this week and made it clear that he intends to go try to play professionally somewhere next year, likely overseas. I don't think anybody sees him as an NBA guy, but family situations being what they are, I'm sure he's looking to go capitalize on an opportunity to try to find a place to play. So we at least know Kerqueth does not intend to come back, but still a lot of optimism for this season and the season to come.
And he'll probably find a place to play. I mean, there's leagues all over the world. I mean, not just in, you know, I think the big one that people think about is in Euro, like the Euro League, but also China. There's a pretty, you know, sizable league in the Emirates, United Arab Emirates, where they're playing professional basketball as well. And I actually watched some of those games on some late night layovers in Dubai a couple of times. It's not the most quality basketball, but, you know, a guy like Kerqueth could find a role there, especially as a big. Not a lot of bigs being played in Dubai, a lot of small ball being played. I mean, you know, kudos to him if he can find a gig. There's a lot of basketball opportunity internationally if you're open to it. So
yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, for a lot of these guys, and we had Isaiah Cousins on our season preview show. He was a point guard on the Final Four team. He was a second round pick back in 2016, and yet he's playing over in Israel right now. So there's opportunities to go and earn a good living, travel the world. And, you know, depending on where guys come from, I mean, I'm sure when Kerqueth goes back to the Sudan, whatever money he's able to earn as a professional basketball player, wherever that is going to help his family out. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's one of those, it's not a one size fits all thing. And it sounds like he's making the best decision for him and his family at this point. So, you know, I think it's a win-win for Oklahoma. He's going to get to go do what's best for him. And I think they will be fine next year if he does not come back. I don't think that's it's not a shot at him, but he's kind of a situational player. So I think it'll be a good thing either way. And now the fact that he's made that intention clear, they can recruit accordingly and know, okay, well, we don't have to account for him to come back next season. So there's some good and bad to those things as well. But so coming up, you know, later in the show, we're definitely going to talk more about the OU men's basketball team, but I did want to let everybody know that back by popular demand, the Players Lounge is coming back to the pod. And I want to give you a little bit of an idea of the lineup we have coming to you in the next episode of the Players Lounge. We're going to be recording that here this week. We've got former Biletnikoff finalist, two-time All-American, first-round draft pick Mark Clayton. We've got one of his running mates at wide receiver, who was a part of some big-time wins in the early 2000s as well, in Will Peoples. We've also got Wes Sims returning. We know he loved Wes. We'll bring Wes back. We've got Rufus Alexander, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, and another special guest looming, but we'll keep you in the dark on that until the episode drops. But stick around with us, subscribe. You want to make sure you tune in to the next episode of the Players Lounge, which will be coming very, very soon.
A star-studded affair with D-Walk and the Players Lounge. So again, make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Sooners podcast wherever you get podcasts. And like David teased out earlier, coming up in the next segment, he's got Ryland Stiles, the phenomenal Ryland Stiles from Locked On Thunder, coming on to talk a little bit about the NBA prospects of one Austin Reeves. And then David's going to have a great conversation with his father in the third segment. So make sure you stick around for that. But before we get to Ryland Stiles and Locked On Thunder, I want to talk to you a little bit about rockauto.com. rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers alike. Why spend up to twice as much as at a storefront auto parts store when you can get the same parts for less at rockauto.com? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. And we're covering everything you need to know about the Oklahoma Sooners, but what about the rest of the sports world? Now, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's got all the sports you need and all the news every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here on the Locked On Sooners podcast with a little bit of a Locked On crossover. We're bringing on, just from across the way, across the Metroplex, Rylan Stiles, the host of Locked On Thunder. Rylan, welcome to the show.
How you doing, man?
Doing great. It's a fun time to have this kind of crossover because Oklahoma basketball is rolling. You're rolling over there covering Oklahoma City Thunder for Locked On Thunder and have been doing a great job all season as Oklahoma City has been in a little bit of a transition with some exciting young players. Oklahoma is kind of having a year like OKC had last year where all of a sudden you look up and it's like, hey, you know what? This team's pretty good. This team's pretty good. So it's been fun to follow Oklahoma, follow OKC, listen to you. And for Sooner fans, if you're not subscribed to the Locked On Thunder podcast, we know most of you are Thunder fans, or at least a lot of you are Thunder fans, so be sure to go check that out. Get all your daily Thunder coverage with Rylan. But Rylan, I wanted to get your thoughts on Austin Reeves. Obviously, you cover the NBA on a daily basis, and we've kind of dismissed Austin Reeves as a good college player whose professional potential is probably overseas, but there's still a lot of opportunity for him to have a big march, to potentially try to play himself into a role in the NBA. And there's also the opportunity for him to come back next year to Norman with this eligibility freeze where he could come back and try to improve upon his game. So just wanted to get your take as a guy that covers the league. Does Austin Reeves have professional potential? And if so, what would that look like at the next level for him?
So the professional potential is interesting because you can go a lot of different ways with it. I think that the biggest comparison for him to me is Isaiah Moss. And so Sooner fans will be kind of familiar with that. Isaiah Moss played with Kansas in the Big 12. He transferred there from Iowa, as Reeves was also a transfer to Oklahoma. And you know, he had his best season, his last season at Kansas. And he has a skill set. He can shoot. He can do a lot of things on the NBA floor if he ever got the chance to. But obviously, March Madness was canceled. The combine was canceled and he didn't get to display that for NBA scouts. And it's kind of silly because, I mean, here's a guy in Reeves that has a huge body of work. He's been in college since 2016, but the March Madness factor actually does play into a guy's ability to get seen and get on the NBA's radar. And we've seen huge marches turn into a big combine, turn into a guy flying up draft boards. With Reeves, I think that the big concern is his three-point percentage has always gone down his entire college career from 50 now all the way down to 23 this year. But you can kind of explain that with the fact that the college game has little to no spacing whatsoever. And if you take more shots, obviously you're going to have the chance to miss more shots. I think that if he can improve that three-point number down the stretch here, and then he goes to the combine, if we have one, which I think that we will, he goes to the combine, he shoots lights out in the open gym, and then teams can start to talk themselves into him being a better three-point shooter because of the free throw percentage. And the free throw percentage is a lot of times what the NBA uses to gauge if a guy can eventually extend beyond the arc. And he's shooting 88% from the free throw line. So there are some things there you can like for a second round pick. There's also things that make you kind of want to stray away from it, but will really help him out though, compared to last year's group. And other than that is the fact he gets a combine and he gets a summer league and he gets a regular G League season. So all that will play into it. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think he's a really good college player. I think that OU fans will remember him for a long time, especially with how good this team has been this season. But sadly for him, it'll be a G League type thing or an overseas type thing, and maybe he can have more success over there.
So do you feel like it would be – is he one of those guys that's like, okay, he is the kind of player that should definitely look at this super senior season option to come back next season and maybe either, you know, get his – 3-point percentage back up into the 35-40 range. Because when he came from Wichita State, he was a spot-up shooter. I mean, that was initially his MO. And I think that shot is there. Would he benefit from having one more full season?
So conventionally, you'd think that, right? You think that, you know, he could get the evaluation of whatever the NBA tells him to work on, whatever the NBA wants him to turn into. But the problem with the NBA, more so than most sports, is that they care so much about the age of guys. There are so many guys who fall down draft boards just because that they're a fully formed product at a college and they don't have that quote unquote upside. I mean, Jalen Brunson was an incredible point guard at Villanova, and now he's a very solid backup point guard for the Mavericks. And he fell down draft boards in a draft class that was not particularly great, where he should have been a higher pick just because of his age. And that's such a NBA thing. So I think that him going back to college would not be good for him because he gets another year older. And if he even slips up at all in other areas, then that can also be a negative for him. I think for him, what he needs to try to capitalize on is the combine and the summer league, because I think that he is good enough to get a summer league workout somewhere. You look at Dean Wade, who was also amazing at Kansas State. He got a summer league tryout with the Cavs, and it went on from there. I think that Reeves is in that ballpark of just going to the NBA this year and hoping he can have a solid combine. And again, if he can show at the combine, even with the open drills of just shooting against air, if he can knock down shots against air, you mix that with his free throw percentage, then he's going to get a shot somewhere, at least to try to get a two-way contract or something like that.
Yeah, the free throw percentage comes in handy for a couple of reasons. One, if he's a backup point guard, he's going to come in a rotation where maybe he comes in at the five-minute mark of a first quarter, and the team's in the bonus. And he's the kind of guy that he knows how to play, and he knows how to initiate contact and get fouls and get to the line. So, you know, certainly that's a – if you're looking at NBA upside, I think his three-point percentage could be attributed to a lot of that. He's got the ball in his hands. He's having to create his own three-pointers. He's not getting guys to penetrate and pitch out to him. So I think there would be some, you know, some upside with his shooting mobility. But, you know, I appreciate you bringing up the point of how the NBA views players and how you can almost age yourself out if you're a borderline guy. That's a fascinating take, and, you know, one that I don't know a lot of people that don't follow the NBA very closely understand that dynamic. So appreciate you sharing that. And one other former Sooner who's been an NBA star for a long time I want to touch on, is who's made news and was trending today here on Twitter as we record this on a cold, frigid Monday here in Oklahoma, Blake Griffin. You know, he was a number one pick in a year where the Thunder, when they first came to town, maybe there was conversation, hey, they could almost tank for Blake, and they end up getting James Harden, which worked out well. But Blake Griffin has been out there as a guy that has had a really good career. I wouldn't say a great career, but a good career. But now he's on the move, seemingly again to Detroit, or from Detroit for Oklahoma City. I don't think Blake Griffin's a fit, and I would assume you would probably agree with where they're going and where they're trending as an organization. But do you find it interesting that throughout the duration of Oklahoma City's time in the NBA, they've never had a former Sooner player arrive? And do you think that there would be value in even exploring Blake Griffin?
I think that it would depend what the Pistons really want to do. And when you start to throw out the rumors that they throw out today that they could buy out Blake Griffin, then it kind of creates this interesting dynamic of the Thunder are not going to attach anything of note to get Blake Griffin. I mean, you can maybe see them giving a ton of expiring deals like Trevor Ariza or Darius Miller, and then find a way to match it that way. And then the Pistons give up first round picks to attach to Blake Griffin. But I don't see the Pistons wanting to do that if it's the fact of they're going to try to buy out Blake Griffin. And if they're already talking that way, then they're willing to give up Blake Griffin for anything, as long as they do not have to give up a first round pick, which I don't think will happen. For the Pistons, I think that you cannot offload Blake Griffin without that. Interesting for Blake Griffin, though, is that he was, you know, there was a rumor that the Thunder were going to trade Paul George for Blake Griffin, but it was just a massive rumor that, you know, trade deadline period during that OK 3 year, which was just a crazy time, crazier than this weather right now. But with Blake Griffin, I think that he's going to get bought out, and I think that he'll find a place on a contender. And I hope that he can have some success, because I think that he's one of those guys that gets unfairly criticized because of the contract. And I hate that we kind of attach the money to these players. In terms of the spreadsheet, yeah, Blake Griffin is not a good asset right now. But that does not mean that he's a terrible player. You can separate the two things.
Right.
You do not want Blake Griffin's contract on a team if you're trying to build a team. But if you want Blake Griffin, the player, on your team, though, if you're trying to build a team, it's just that the Pistons gave him way too much money and the Clippers gave him way too much money. Remember, the Clippers gave him that whole pitch about being a Clipper for life and then traded him the next year. It's a dumb front office move. It's not that he's a bad player anymore. And the contract does not equate to what kind of player you are in that sense. It does not, like, Russell Westbrook is a bad contract right now, and he's a bad player right now, but that's not negate all the great things that Russell Westbrook did in his career. It just means that right now he's getting overpaid and he's a bad player in this season. But before this, he was not a bad player just because it was a huge contract. So I think that with Blake Griffin, he'll get bought out and he'll find a way onto a contending-ish team, and he'll be able to have that Nicholas Batum effect. And Blake has always been a much better player than Batum. But Batum this year, he got bought out. He goes to the Clippers. He's playing really well in that Clippers role, and he's doing it for like $2 million. And so now people evaluate him differently and say, oh, he's a really good player now. Look at this great Nicholas Batum. He's playing the exact same way. He's just not getting paid $20 million. He's getting paid $2 million. So it makes more sense in your mind.
Yeah,
and fans, I think that will happen for Blake.
Yeah, and fans obsess about contracts of which they're not paying any dollars to. I mean, it's these guys, we started labeling guys as busts or not valued, you know, not worthy of the contract they receive. When their numbers don't meet it, then we start to just basically disregard their abilities altogether. And then, like you said, all of a sudden a different number is attached to their name, and their performance is now makes them a valuable asset. So it is a fascinating development as the NBA has trended toward that value-based proposition. But, you know, I do feel like if there was an opportunity there in a rebuild year where the Thunder, you know, were needing a box office name to draw while they're tanking, or, you know, to sell more jerseys, I do feel like there is down the road value in a Blake Griffin homecoming to the Thunder. I don't know when that would be, you know, maybe on the back end of his career in some kind of a role where he could have it come full circle as the OCS star, the OU star that finally comes back home to end his career as a Thunder. That there is some neat things to think about down the road. Now, it won't be the human highlight reel Blake Griffin that everybody would be wanting to see, but I do think that would maybe be a neat development later in his career.
Yeah, I think that with Blake Griffin, I mean, I don't think it'll be like this season. I think it'll get bought out and go to a contender, but you have to imagine that whenever he gets bought out, he's only going to sign a 1-year deal, maybe a 1+1 type deal on the free agency market right now if he gets bought out. So there is the door open, especially if you trade out Horford. I mean, if you trade out Horford and get rid of him, then you don't have a big man and you really don't have a veteran presence. And I think that with Blake Griffin, in terms of selling tickets, obviously right now you don't have any tickets to sell. And also right now, it doesn't really matter what your team looks like. It literally doesn't matter because half of your audience cannot watch the team even if they wanted to. Even if you had the best team imaginable, if you have YouTube TV or if you have Hulu TV or if you have Dish TV, if you don't have basic cable or DirecTV, you literally cannot watch the product they're giving you right now. So it doesn't matter what they put on the floor for this next season and maybe even beyond that, depending on the TV partner deals and how they work out. I think that with Blake Griffin, down the road, you could obviously see it happening. It depends what he values. I mean, does he care about playing in Oklahoma City? Obviously, the Thunder will never give him a ton of money. We'll never give him an expanded role even, because you're going to see the Thunder start drafting players and cashing in on these draft picks. I mean, they have three this year. If the Warriors pick falls below 20, they have three first-round picks this year, not to mention their couple second-round picks. So they're going to have a full roster. So obviously, that's going to take precedent over playing Blake Griffin big minutes or giving him a ton of opportunity with the ball or usage. So it depends what Blake values himself. If he wants to have that homecoming and wants to play for his hometown team, then sure, you could see that happen. But other than that, it's kind of a moot point for the Thunder's perspective of it. But for Blake and the Sooner perspective of it, I think that he'll get this rejuvenation in his career when he's no longer in Detroit. Because again, people will start praising him more than they are hating on him because of that number attached to his name on the contract.
Yeah, and I'm excited for him to get a new opportunity. You know, I've got a 7-year-old son that is transfixed on Oklahoma basketball right now, and I was talking about Blake Griffin the other day, and it just dawned on me that he doesn't really have a big reference point for Blake Griffin. You know, I'm like, wow, this guy was the player at Oklahoma, you know, and was one of the guys in the NBA in his early career. So we certainly hope for the best for him and that he finds a good destination, because Detroit is not it for Blake Griffin. And we'll just be keeping tabs on that. I'm sure all Sooner fans will have a keen interest in where Blake Griffin ends up and how he finishes his career, given that he was such a dynamic player there in Norman. So, Ryland, thank you for coming on, man. Appreciate you taking some time. And listen, Sooner fans, if you just listened to Ryland for the last, 13 minutes and you didn't get fired up to go check out Locked On Thunder, I can't do anything for you. The guy knows this stuff. He's on top of it. So go subscribe to their podcast as well. There's a lot of great content there on the daily. So, Ryland, thanks again, man, for coming on with us.
I appreciate you having me.
And there he goes, Ryland Stiles, host of Locked On Thunder. But we're going to talk more basketball coming up. We've got another special guest in segment 3. We're going to go and bring on the best coach I know to talk about Oklahoma basketball coaches. We're going to bring on a 3-time state champion, high school basketball coach, a member of the Oklahoma Coaches Association Hall of Fame, who also happens to be my father. And we're going to talk to Jerry Walker of Fort Gibson High School when we come back here on the Locked On Sooners podcast. But first, I want to tell you about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline also even covers award shows, TV shows, reality TV. They provide real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you head to their website, and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And March Madness is right around the corner, but the future of the NBA is on full display right now. Get a head start on next year's draft analysis by subscribing to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board Podcast. Again, subscribe to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board Podcast wherever you get your podcasts so you're caught up on all things NBA draft. And we're back here on the Locked On Sooners podcast and want to bring on three-time state champion with the Fort Gibson Lady Tigers, OCA Hall of Famer, my dad, Jerry Walker, on the podcast. What's going on up there in Fort Gibson, single-digit territory of the weather? Dad, welcome to the show.
Well, hey, I appreciate having the opportunity to visit with you on your podcast. It's always good to talk to my son. He's gone big time on me now at the big podcast with OU and Iron Horse. So I'm very proud of you. Doing a great job. Good listen. My daily walks, I take listen to the podcast. So, but it's burr refrigeration cold up here. Let me tell you that. It's like North Pole in Oklahoma. That's what it feels like. It was five degrees when I walked in the door.
Five whole degrees up in Fort Gibson, Oklahoma, USA. Now, Dad, we have a Twitter poll going on right now talking about who is the best basketball coach in OU men's basketball history. Now, that's a complicated question for a number of reasons, but it's also a very subjective conversation because unlike OU football, where you have Bud Wilkinson with three national titles, the 47-game winning streak, Barry Switzer with the three natties, Bob with one national title, but also three championship game losses in an era where they were playing in the BCS and things were a little bit different. He also made a playoff. You know, there's a lot of criteria you can use for college football to determine who the best football coach in Oklahoma is and have a ravenous debate about that. But OU basketball has a similar type of debate because you got Billy, Kelvin, and Lon, who all have one Final Four to their name and their tenure at Oklahoma. Now, obviously, those guys, the first two had longer careers at Oklahoma than Lon Kruger has had to this point and probably had, you know, maybe a few more good seasons than Lon Kruger has had to this point. But also, when I look at Lon Kruger, I look at what he did before he got to Oklahoma. He went to a Final Four at Florida. Out of those other guys, he's the only one that's coached in the NBA. He's been an NBA head coach. He's won a tournament game at five different locations. So when I look at this conversation, you know, there's a big picture way to approach it of who had the best OU career, or there's also to say who is the best basketball coach to have been in that seat. So I know you have followed Oklahoma basketball all the way through. So you were there. You remember the Billy Tubbs era. You were front row seat of Kelvin Sampson, as was I. That was kind of my formative years as Kelvin Sampson. I kind of came in late to the Billy Tubbs show. Now all of us watching Lon Kruger and what he's doing with this team. So for you, what are your thoughts on this conversation as it relates to Billy, Kelvin, and Lon?
That's quite a trio of Oklahoma men's basketball coaches, and any one of the three would be deserving of being and could have accolades as to laying claim to that title. Your Twitter poll, don't know who the audience is as far as age group and stuff, but probably a lot of them remember Billy from Wayman Tisdale in those days, Billy and the boys, when they were putting 100 on people and just making it like a track meet on the basketball on the floor. And people really fell in love with that because at that time, OU basketball really wasn't a big brand, but Billy brought it out there and it became national. And it was a good time for OU basketball. Billy changed the persona around there. And anytime you come to a football power, regardless of what your athletic program is, if you can stake your name out there and put it out nationally at a football powerhouse, that takes a lot of work and stuff. So Billy being the pioneer in that for him, you know, he gets a lot of accolades for that. And for me, that would be because anytime you start a tradition and you get it built in, it's still hard to maintain the tradition, but it's a little easier to maintain than to build, because the maintaining is you've already established the expectations and you've established what success is in that program. When Billy came in, he had to generate his own excitement, generate his own expectations, because at that point there probably wasn't as much. Kelvin following Billy was a tough follow as well, because they're both two different coaches. Billy was going to outscore you. If he gave up 80, he was going to beat you 110-80. Kelvin was going to try and beat you 50-49, and took pride in just really smoking you defensively. And, you know, hence he always wore the blue shirts and stuff. As a result, everybody's in the blue collar defensive network he had out there. And so Kelvin sometimes doesn't get the accolades because it wasn't pretty ball. Sometimes it was just ugly ball. But as you said, all of them have made it at one point in their career to the finals, Final Four. And then you look at Lon, and Lon has done it multiple stops. But here for OU, you remember Billy with Wayman and Stacey King and all those, you know, big-time NBA guys that went on to play in the NBA. And Kelvin had a few of his own. I'm not discounting Trey Young, but he was here for a year with Lon. And then, you know, we had the great shooter that went to the Final Four of the championship game with us. So you take those guys. But for the most part, Lon has done it with a team concept of just hardworking guys that fit in. And they're not worried who gets their 15 or 20 tonight. They're all capable of getting it. And it's just all about the next possession, stopping them defensively, however we have to do it, getting it done. And whoever scores, and we're ready to play D again. And that philosophy has started to really pick up, and people are talking about OU basketball within the state, about how, you know, nothing was expected much because we didn't have any superstars really coming back, but just a lot of guys that were hardworking and a couple of transfers. And, you know, and then with COVID, you're sitting at home, so you're watching more games. And, hey, it's OU basketball. It's not OU football. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, these guys are really playing great defense, you know. So I think that Lon has endeared himself because he's the class that he handles the program with. He's been here, 10 years now, and got a clean program, which is his track record wherever he's been. His demeanor on the sideline, people want to play for him. I mean, look at the starting lineup he's got now. I think two of them are transfers. One came from California. One came from Texas. People don't transfer over if they don't want to play for you. And it's not like we've been in the top 10 in the nation before those guys transferred in here. So there's something going on there that he's got building, and he gets all the success and credit for that. And as a coach, I think, you know, whenever I'm looking at somebody, I say, you know, their coaching prowess shows whenever they have less talent to do it with, and they're doing it at a high level. The Big 12 basketball conference has to be arguably the best in the country. And, you know, I grew up, it was the ACC with Duke, North Carolina State, and just kept on rolling, you know, right down to the ACC. Now you're talking about the Big 12 is that conference. There's 6 to 8 teams that should be in the tournament, or maybe more. And for Lon, night in, night out, to maintain that intensity on the defensive end with these guys, it's just a tribute to him with all the protocols you're having to go through as a coach. You're so much more than a coach this year specifically.
Yeah, and you mentioned Trey Young, and obviously the Buddy Hield team, it had Buddy as a star, but they had a guy like Orion Spangler that just did all the dirty work, right? They had Isaiah Cousins, who was a second-round pick. He's playing over in Israel right now. Even with Buddy, they were still, in most ways, a sum of their parts kind of a team. They relied on Buddy to be the one to get them going, but they were a team that had a lot of guys contribute back in 16 when they made that Final Four run. But if you go back just to, you know, 3 seasons ago, the Trae Young experiment, right? The one season of Trae Young. So Brady Manick is a senior right now. He was a freshman with Trey. And that team, as I look back on it, I feel like that was one year where Lon almost kind of like he allowed things to be different than what he would typically do. And he let Trey be Trey. And that was probably part of the deal. It's like, hey, you can come here and I'll let you be you. And they went 18-14 and they made the tournament. They were not, you know, as the season went on, and once you kind of like enjoyed Trey for a while, it started to become, you know, for those of us who watch the game with a critical eye, it's like you want to see good basketball and you want to see them move it. It became a really difficult watch, right? I mean, the way they were playing, it was not the kind of team basketball you want to see. And whether Trey, you know, doing his thing was a good or bad thing, I mean, people can debate that, but I think what they're doing right now, and you've seen this in your own coaching career, I've seen some of the best teams you had, the most talented teams, the most college players you had, wasn't a team that won the state title for you. It was a team that maybe was more of a sum of its parts that would share it, move it, multiple contributors that would play as a team. And that's what I think is at this college level right now with the one and done guys across the country that well, you can get. And they've got three D1 transfers in their lineup right now. You got Austin Reeves, Emoja Gibson, and Elijah Harkless. All these guys are D1 transfers. They've all seen and done other things. Now they're here. They kind of rally together. You got a guy like Manic. It's a four-year guy. When you get buy-in and you have veterans and they're willing to make the extra pass and cover as well, if you're willing to defend and make the extra pass, I just feel like that gives you a leg up against some of these teams that might or might not be more talented on you or than you on paper. And how do you feel like as they go into March with the teams they've already been able to beat, when they approach March Madness, wherever they're seated, how do you feel like that ability to cover and to play team basketball on the offensive end is going to help them out in March?
Well, it's like you say, it's not always the most talented team that wins. I heard you guys talk today about what seed OU would be, and you know, if they were to beat Baylor once or whatever, and just because you're talking about how talented Baylor was, but if we could get them once, would it move us to a one or a two? You guys are talking about that on your podcast today, and nobody would talk about that if once in a while the less talented team didn't beat the talented team. So when you look at this group in playoffs, what's bonded these guys is their commitment to us, not me, but us. And therefore, it's not about me, it's about our team. And that's the kind of defensive mentality that they have as well. So if you get beat off the dribble, my man is your man. Your man is our man, not just your man. And so they're defending at a level right now. If you look, there's not many fouls going to the basket because guys aren't getting to the basket because even if they beat me off the dribble, they're getting picked up by the help before they get to the rim.
Right.
And that transfers into playoff basketball night in, night out. Your shot may not be there, but your defensive intensity, your defensive play will be there because that's not a finesse thing. That's a physical and that's a mindset thing. And when you're a defensive-minded ball club, you're going to take that with you every time you walk out on the floor. Your shot may not be there tonight, but it'll probably work out before the game's over if you're a shooter. But your defensive mindset and intensity and toughness, that walks out there from the tip of the ball to the buzzer goes off for the last quarter. So that's something there that they have. I think they transition really well to a playoff team because there's not going to be anybody across from them. I don't care what the number is by their seating that's going to look forward to seeing them because they're a tough guard and they're a tough defensive team to try to score against.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's the one encouraging thing about this run that OU has been on is the type of team they're playing night in, night out, and winning against or losing. The only games they've lost, three of their last four losses in Big 12 play, they lost by 15 at Baylor, who's number two in the nation, undefeated. The other losses they have, 2 points to Texas Tech and Norman, lost by four at Kansas, and lost by five in Lubbock without two starters. I mean, that's their losses. And their wins, I mean, we talked all day about how many great wins they have. So, I mean, that's the team we're talking about right now, that you put them wherever you want to put them in Indianapolis against whoever you want to put them against, and they've got a puncher's chance at least of coming out on top. And they're I say a puncher's chance because this team will fight you. Like, this team will get after you defensively. Elijah Harkless will go toe-to-toe with anybody in America. And that to me, I see a little bit of Kelvin Sampson's team in this team. You know, we had Eddie Radosovich on from the franchise, and he grew up, you know, in the same way I did. We're kind of watching that heart hustle hardwood that Sampson used to talk about. And we were talking about, like, kind of pontificating on is it possible that Elijah Harkless is like a time traveler, that he could have played for Kelvin Sampson for a couple of years, and we just found some eligibility for this guy to bring him in 2021, right? But, if you know, in saying that, kind of looking back on this coaching conversation, you got Billy Tubbs, Kelvin Sampson, Lon Kruger. Do you feel like, you know, Billy Tubbs and his style of play, could he take a roster like this? Now, you could say, well, he wouldn't have recruited a roster like this, and that's fair. But just walking in, do you feel like Billy Tubbs is the guy that's going to get the most out of a team? Kelvin Sampson is going to get the most out of a team, or Lon Kruger? Like, when you look at just, I got to pick one guy to go into March, X and O's, matchup for matchup, and try to get to a Final Four and win it. which of those three coaches are you going to take, and in what order would you kind of rank those guys in?
Well, like I say, you know, none of those guys are even in this conversation if they aren't a guy who could get their teams ready to play and get the most out of whatever talent they had. They don't get to the spots that they got to, the levels that they achieved. So all three of them, obviously, throughout their career have done that, have maximized talent. Just because you have talent doesn't mean that you're less of a coach that doesn't have as much talent. You still, sometimes when you have the talent, the maximizing of what you have to the level that it is and pushing it even farther than what it maybe people thought are possible, just because they're NBA guys, recruits coming in that have NBA potential. So you're given that to start with, but you still have to get them to buy into certain levels also of trust and stuff with you and with their teammates and not be on the individual path, the NBA only. So you still have to put in a team deal. So for Billy to take some of the players that he took on that high level end and mesh them and get to the championship game, you know, did he max out his talent? I mean, I'm not here to say whether he did or he didn't, because he got to the final championship game. When you get to that game, there's only two people there that are both championship quality. One's just going to get the national trophy, you know, and the other one's going to be a national trophy contender, but definitely not a loser. And then you have same thing with Kelvin. He did it a different way. I see Lon's a combination of both. I mean, you know what, we scored 91 the other night at Morgantown. But yet, at the same time, defensively, it was a fist fight every possession. I think Kelvin would love watching Lon's team. I think Billy would have loved watching Lon's team as well. I think they could see it themselves in Lon's coaching. I think Lon's mannerisms on the sideline, for me, his calm, cool collectedness, his coaching, his teaching. You can see him teaching in the timeouts. He reminds me a lot of the guy I was fortunate enough to play for. That was Coach Hayes at Oklahoma Christian. Coach was, you know, a teacher at the highest level as well of the game. So for me, I love what I see with Lon, but that's also, you know, right now I'm older where I can appreciate Lon more. But I always enjoyed watching Kelvin play because it was tough-nosed defense. And, you know, I had the fortune of playing for another Hall of Fame college coach in Mick Weiberg, and that's the way Coach Weiberg coached us, was to be hard-nosed and physical. And that was right down, you know, Kelvin's line. And then for Coach Tubbs, I mean, he just, in my opinion, he's kind of the godfather of OU men's basketball. I mean, that's when everybody thinks of OU, that's who they probably think of first, is Billy Ball. So for me, I couldn't really rank them any different. Probably what people are going to rank them, that's Billy and then, you know, Coach Tubbs and then Coach Kruger and then Coach Sampson. And, you know, you take out some of the NC2A stuff that came up with different ones of them. Then, you know, Lon, because of the clean program and stuff, obviously would be, you know, obviously easy number one choice for me. And he's done it in so many places. He's been such a class guy. I mean, he represents our university so well in our state. But not that the others didn't, because they're very well known. And yep, a lot of respect for Coach Tubbs and Coach Sampson.
Yeah, and that's why I think this is such a fun conversation to have is, I mean, you're really splitting hairs between three guys that did amazing things at Oklahoma. At a football school, they've all been able to go to a Final Four, bring the program to national prominence, and leave us with a fun thing to talk about. You know, and here in the year that Billy passed away, they got Billy on their jerseys and they're making a run to the Final Four. And I mean, that could be a pretty neat thing to see what they do and to see how, see that Billy patch in March Madness and potentially see them cutting down some nets with that. That would be a neat year, a neat way to wrap up that era of Billy Tubbs and kind of a nice tribute to him. And I think the way they're playing right now is a tribute to him as well. So,
I think it's right. Not to interrupt you, but I think it's right because I think you're seeing that because of the input in the program of Kelvin and Billy, that you're seeing Lon's reaping some of that because that patch on the shirt means something to them.
Yeah.
You know, because even if they weren't able to watch those teams of, you know, coach back then play, Coach Tubbs, they've seen the videos and they know some of the pro players and stuff that have played for him. And then Coach Sampson, obviously still coaching, they still know his persona.
Yeah.
And so that's the tradition that those early guys put into the program. And now you're maintaining it.
Right.
And you're borrowing bits and pieces of their success to do so. So I think it's just a big intertwined mosaic art piece that they're all interwoven together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the run because I think that, you know, they're playing inspired basketball.
They are, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And it's fun to watch as an OU football fan as well. You know, so many times OU football fans, we're so jaded because if it's not a national title, it's just kind of this frustrating, kind of leaves you with a frustration level in the pit of your stomach at the end of every year once you realize you're not going to be in the title game. But men's basketball is just, it's almost more of a refreshing, like, hey, this is enjoyable. You know, we can just sit back and be entertained and really appreciate the effort that they're putting in. And, you know, and they, maybe you're listening and you're like, well, I'm a season ticket holder. I expect Final Four every year. And if that's you, hey, thank you for sticking in there with them. Thank you for being at Lloyd Noble, because we need more people there. But, you know, it's been a fun year and it's going to be a fun ride to March. And, Dad, appreciate you hopping on with us today to give your thoughts about the different coaches here and the differences between the three of them and similarities and all those things. It was a fun conversation, and that's going to do it for us here today on the Locked On Sooners podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating and write us a review on any platform. And also go follow us on Twitter at Locked On Sooners. And for John Williams, Ryland Stiles of Locked On Thunder, for my dad, the Hall of Famer, Jerry Walker, I'm David Walker. We'll catch you tomorrow. Boomer Sooner.